Chapter 7. The wards knocked me on my ass the moment I tried to leave the property. Ow! I rebounded like a rubber ball off a brick wall and landed on the lawn, or rather what was left of the lawn, which was dirt. I was in a dark zone. It wasn't winter, but shades that had stripped the yard of life. Mother Nature left grass, even in her harshest moments. Shades left nothing. Barons must have brought me here after they'd already claimed the neighborhood. What better place to hide a weapon from the enemy than deep in their own territory? Especially since he and they seemed to have a tacit agreement to leave each other alone. I took off my Mihalo. It was light enough that I wouldn't need it again until nightfall, and I suspected the shades that had devastated this area had moved on to more fertile ground anyway. Hooked it onto a strap on my pack and rubbed my head. The wards had nearly split my skull. My molars hurt. Even my scalp felt bruised. I hadn't seen that coming. I narrowed my eyes. Faint silver runes glistened on the sidewalk I'd just tried to cross. Wards were sneaky things, often hard to see, made doubly so this morning by a thin coating of frost. But now that I knew they were there, I could discern the telltale shimmer of Baron's subtle work, vanishing east and west around both sides of the house. Although I knew he was meticulous, I still walked the perimeter looking for a gap. There wasn't one. I decided it must have been an aberration that the wards had repelled me so violently. Barons warded things out. He never warded me in. I stepped onto the lightly iced sidewalk in a different place. I went flying backward again, teeth vibrating, ears ringing. I sat up, growling. The nerve. If I hadn't been determined to leave before, I was now.
He has warded me out as well, Mihalo, or I would have come for you long ago.
Belaine's voice preceded his appearance. One moment I was glowering at the air, the next at Belaine's knees. For a moment I kept my gaze fixed there. A woman might feel a little terrified after what I'd been through. Not that I did, just that some other woman might. Belaine is Seely, one of the alleged good guys, if any of the Fae can be called that. But he's still a death-by-sex Fae, same as those masters of killing lust that had so recently devolved me into the lowest common denominator. All Fae royalty, whether light court or dark, can turn humans pariah with sex. And like his darker, deadly Unseelie brethren, when in his natural high glamour, Belaine is too beautiful for a human to look at directly. I'm no exception. The Dark Princess had made my eyes bleed. Belaine could, too, if he felt like it. Since the day I met him, he'd been using his death-by-sex magnetism on me to varying degrees, although I now knew just how gentle his coercion had really been compared to what he could have done in his efforts to make me help him track the Shisadu. We'd had an ongoing battle about what form he would assume in my presence, with him always turning on too much sexual charisma, and me always insisting he mute it. I raised my gaze to the inevitable perfection of the Seely Prince's face, bracing myself for the impact. There was none. He stood before me with every bit of his death-by-sex fayness dampened. For the first time since I'd met him, I was able to look directly at him, absorbing his inhuman, incredible perfection without being affected by it. Belaine looked as close to a human male as he could get, in jeans, boots, and a loose linen shirt half unbuttoned. He was apparently unaffected by the frigid weather, or perhaps the cause of it. Fae can affect the weather with their moods. His beautifully muscled golden body was no more perfect than that of any airbrushed model. His long golden hair no longer shimmered with a dozen seductive, otherworldly shades. His flawlessly symmetrical features might have graced any magazine cover. The only aspect of his fae nature he'd retained were those bottomless, ancient, iridescent eyes. He was still something to see. Tawny, sexy man with alien, glowing eyes. But I was not assaulted by a frantic desire to tear off my clothes. I didn't feel a tingle of lust, not the faintest sensation of being weak at the knees. and he'd done it without my even having to ask. I wasn't about to thank him. It was the least he could do after what his race had done to me. He studied me while I studied him. His eyes contracted slightly, then widened infinitesimally, which on a human face meant very little, but on a fae's was an expression of astonishment. I wondered why. Because I'd survived? Had my odds really been so low?
I have been monitoring these wards, and since the disturbance, I am pleased to see you, Michaela.
Thanks for the rescue, I said coldly. Nice of you to show up when I needed you. Oh, wait. I barked a sharp little laugh. I remember now. You didn't. In fact, your name crashed and burned when I tried to use it. If he'd never given me his name on my tongue, I wouldn't have been so fearless that night. I'd been lulled into complacency, believing I had a Seelie Prince available at the snap of my fingers to sift in and sift me out to instant safety. It had made me feel invincible when I shouldn't have, and when I'd needed him the most, it had failed. Better never to have depended on it at all. I should have kept Danny by my side that night. She could have whisked me to safety. He spread his hands, palms up, and bowed his head in a gesture of subservience. I snorted. The holier-than-thou Seelie Prince was bowing his head to me?
1,000 apologies could not atone for the harm my brethren were permitted to inflict upon you. It sickens me that you were—
He broke off, bowing his head even more deeply, as if he couldn't bring himself to go on. It was a completely human gesture. I didn't trust it one bit. So, I picked myself up off the ground and dusted off my new leather coat. What's your excuse for failing me on Halloween? Baron said he was stuck in Scotland. Actually, he said it was complicated. Was it complicated, Villaine? I asked, sweetly, as I slung my gun around the back side of my shoulder. It banged into my backpack. I liked the solid, reassuring weight of my weapons and ammo. He winced at the tone of my voice, not missing the arsenic in the sugar. While I'd been busy being pariah, Villaine had obviously been busy expanding his repertoire of human expressions. Still, these expressions were different than that first one. They were too large for a fae, overblown. Iridescent eyes met mine.
Exceedingly.
I hooked my thumbs in my jeans pockets. Go on, I smiled. There was nothing he could say that would ever make me trust again in something so mystical and fundamentally flawed as a fae name embedded in my tongue. But I wanted to see how far he might go to get back in my good graces.
Avil was my first priority, Michaela. You know that. Without her, all else is insignificant. Without her, the walls can never be rebuilt. She alone is our hope of reclaiming the Song of Making.
The Fae were matriarchal, and only the Seelie Queen could wield the Song of Making. I knew very little about the song, just that it was the stuff from which the walls of the Unseelie prison had been forged, hundreds of thousands of years ago. Roughly 6,000 years ago, when the compact had been negotiated between our races, apportioning shares of the planet, Avil had jury-rigged an extension of those ancient walls to separate Fae and human realms. Unfortunately, her tampering had weakened the prison walls, enabling Darok, the Lord Master, to bring them all crashing down on Halloween. So why didn't Avil just sing them back into existence? Because, in typical Fae infighting fashion, the Unseelie King had killed the long-ago Seelie Queen before she'd been able to pass on her knowledge to the next one. Avil, latest in a long succession of queens to rule with diminished power, had no idea how to sing the Song of Making. They needed me, Oop Detector Extraordinaire, to find the one remaining clue to recreating the song, the Shisadu, a deadly book that contained all the dark magic of the Unseelie King. The king had been close to discovering it when his mortal concubine killed herself, and he'd abandoned his experiments that had created the dark half of the Fae race. And only I can find the book she needs to do it, I said coolly. So who's expendable? His eyes narrowed minutely, and he glanced sideways. Pink Mac wouldn't have even noticed it. I wasn't her anymore. My spine snapped straight, and I went nose to nose at the ward line with him. If I could have reached through it and grabbed him by the throat, I would have. Oh, God, you actually thought that through and decided it was me? You knew I was in trouble and didn't help me, I snarled. You believed I would survive it. Or was it that you figured I'd be even easier to use if I was Priya? His iridescent eyes blazed.
I could not be in two places at once. I was forced to choose. The Queen would not have survived the night. It was imperative she survive.
You son of a bitch. You knew they were coming for me.
I did not.
Liar.
By the time I learned what they'd planned, it was too late, Michaela. Despite my powers, I failed to foresee how dangerous Darok had become. None of us foresaw it. We believed the walls would weaken further on Samhain. We even believed more of the Unseelie would escape. But we did not believe Darok could succeed in bringing the walls down completely. Not only did he accomplish the unthinkable, he managed to block all Fey magic as thoroughly as he demolished your human grids. For a time that night, not one of us could sift. Not one of us could change form. Not one of us could draw upon the birthright of our magic. I was forced to carry my queen to a new hiding place on human.
He sneered the word.
Feet.
While I lay on my human ass and your fairy, I sneered the word, brethren, fucked my brains out and nearly killed me.
But failed, Michaela. But failed. Remember that. You are queenly in your own right.
So the end justifies the means. Is that what you think?
Do they not?
I suffered, I gritted. Horrible, unspeakable things.
Yet you stand here now, toe to toe with the Seelie Prince. Impressive for a human. Perhaps you are becoming what you need to be.
What doesn't kill me makes me stronger. That's what you think I should take away from this.
Yes, and be glad for it.
Let me tell you something. I fisted my hand in the collar of his shirt. What I will be glad for is the day the last one of you is dead. He went oddly, completely still. I shook him. He didn't budge. I blinked. Then I got it. He was frozen. I'd nulled him. Nulling is a rare she-seer talent, and according to Rowena, I'm the last null alive. I can freeze a fey with the mere touch of my hands. I can turn it on or off at will, the same way fey princes can control their lethal eroticism. I hadn't even been thinking about nulling, but apparently my hostility toward his race in general had come across as intent to null. Since he was already frozen, I punched him a few times, indulging my rage at all things fey. Then I focused on my she-seer center and forced it to relax. A muscle worked in his perfect jaw. Oh yes, he'd been brushing up on his human gestures.
Punching me was not necessary.
Oops. I'd forgotten they were only frozen when I nulled them, not oblivious. Oh well. But it sure felt good.
Well done, Michaela.
He said tightly. For freezing you? I've done it before.
Not that.
He looked down at my hand. I looked down at it, too. Then past it, to my feet. I was over the ward line. I'd stepped right through it without even realizing it. Not only that, I was holding a Seelie Prince by the collar, and I wasn't remotely aroused. No matter the form Valaine had donned in the past, I'd never stood so close to him without having to battle the irresistible impulse to have sex with him, right then and there, even when he'd been toned down as far as, according to him, he could go. I leaned into him, pressed myself against his perfect fey body. He molded to me instantly, slid his arms around me, dropped his face to my hair. He was hard, ready. I felt nothing. I drew back and looked up. There was that minute contraction and widening of his eyes again. Astonishment. Why? What had astonished him when he'd first seen me? that I had recovered from being pariah, or something more, a thing virtually inconceivable to him? I stretched on my toes, pulled his head down, and kissed him. His response was instant and held every bit of 140,000 years of sexual expertise, but not 1 ounce of that elusive, deadly death-by-sex fae quality. I pushed back and stared at him. I could feel intense sexual arousal rolling off him, but no more so than I would coming off any man. There went that muscle in his jaw again. Was it possible he wasn't muting himself? I'd heard that if you took certain poisons but didn't die, you acquired immunity. Had I drunk enough poison de fae? Unmute yourself, I demanded.
I am not muted.
Did he ever sound pissed? You're lying. Could it really be true? Had everything I'd gone through made me immune to fae sexual compulsion?
No, Michaela.
I don't believe you. I would not be lulled into stupidity again, into believing something that wasn't true so it could be used against me.
I would not have believed it either. No human has ever come back from being made pariah, and although I am pleased that you have recovered from what was done to you, I am not pleased that I must now compete for you with no glamour, without the glory of my birthright. They were unseelie, Michaela, the foulest of the foul, the darkest of my race, the abominations. I am seelie, and we are vastly different. I had hoped that one day, when you trusted me, you would let me share with you the ecstasy of being with one like me, with no pain, Michaela, and no price. Now that can never be. You have no idea how exquisite the experience might have been, and now never will.
Bullshit, I said. Games within games. That was all my life was anymore. Was he lying just so he could ambush me when I least expected it?
You suffered the full, undampened power of 3 unseelie princes. They were inside you. It is impossible to predict all it might have done to you.
4, I snarled. And don't remind me where they were. I'm acutely aware of it. His eyes narrowed to slits and sparked with inhuman fire.
4. There were 4. Who was this 4th? Was it Barons? Tell me.
I flinched. The thought had never occurred to me. The 4th one who had kept himself concealed from me had been the 4th unseelie prince, hadn't he? The 4th was Fay, wasn't he? All my she-seer abilities had been completely deadened from eating unseelie flesh the night before, to gain fae heightened strength to escape the riots and make it to safety. In all honesty, I couldn't swear the 4th was fae. I could only say he'd been intensely sexual. Why had he kept his face hidden? All I'd ever seen of him was a glimpse of skin, muscle, tattoo. Tattoo. It couldn't have been Barons. He was in Scotland that night. Thelane's anger iced the air. The temperature dropped so sharply that my next inhalation burned my lungs.
Not the entire night, Michaela. The Keltar ritual to maintain the walls between realms was sabotaged. The circle of stones in which the sacred rites have been performed since the day the compact was negotiated between my queen and your human Keltar was destroyed, supplanted by a fey realm. Barons was last seen at midnight on Samhain. He could easily have been in Dublin before dawn.
Ouch. Then why hadn't he come for me immediately? Why hadn't he tracked me by the brand he'd stamped at the base of my skull and saved me? For that matter, how long had it taken for him to rescue me from my hell at the Abbey? My memory of those early days was badly blurred. Barons doesn't hang out with the Unseelie or the L.M. They don't like him any more than you do.
Indeed.
Valaine's iridescent eyes were mocking. Remind me, I said with acid sweetness. Why is that again? He'd never told me, and I didn't think he would now. But I would find out one way or another. I was going to find out everything, one way or another. I had to consider what Valain was saying. In my unpredictable, frequently inexplicable world, I had to consider everything. Not only did Barons have some kind of agreement with the Shades, he knew a tremendous amount about the never-before-seen by humans because they'd always been incarcerated, unseelie half of the Fey race. He was much older than a human could be, and I'd recently caught him stepping out of the unseelie silver he kept in his study at the bookstore, carrying a woman who'd been brutally killed. What possible reason might Barons have to turn me pariah, then bring me back? For the opportunity to play the hero? To storm in and save the day in hopes of securing my blind faith once and for all? Not only hadn't it worked, but why wouldn't he just keep me pariah and use me? He could have stopped in his efforts to restore my mind halfway through, then left me hanging in a mentally impaired yet functional pariah state indefinitely, and I'd have done anything he'd asked to keep getting sex. I'd have traipsed all over the world, hunting the dark book, slave to his every command. But he hadn't. He'd brought me all the way back, freed me.
"What does Barons want, Michaela?"
Valain said softly. Same thing as Valain and everyone else I'd met since I'd arrived in Dublin. The Shi Sadu. But neither Barons nor I could touch it. I could track it, and he believed I had the potential to get my hands on it eventually with the right training. I didn't believe Barons had been the fourth. That wasn't his way. But might it have been his idea of the right training? How far would Barons go to get what he wanted? He was mercenary to the core, constantly pushing me, trying to make me tougher, stronger, trying to make me what I needed to be in order to do what he wanted me to do. I was now immune to death by sex fey. I could walk through wards. I was more powerful in ways that could have been accomplished only by putting me through something that would either kill me or make me stronger. A proving ground. Die or evolve. It was too awful for me to contemplate. Maybe the fourth was you, Valain. How do I know it wasn't? My skin frosted. When I shivered, crystals of ice fell in a small snowstorm to the sidewalk.
I was with my queen.
So you say.
I would never harm you.
You constantly manipulate me sexually.
Only to a pleasurable limit.
According to who? His face tightened.
You do not understand my race. Seelie and unseelie do not suffer the other to exist. We do not consort. Even now we battle as we did before so long ago.
So you say.
How can I set your mind at ease, Michaela?
You can't. I could trust no one, rely on nothing but myself. I don't know who the fourth was that day, but I will find out. And when I do, I reached for the comfort of my gun and smiled coldly. By fey weapon or human, I would have revenge.
Ah, yes. You have changed.
Valain's eyes narrowed, and he studied me.
Could it be?
He murmured. What? I demanded. I didn't like the way he was looking at me. Fascination in a fey's eyes is never a good thing.
Behold me. I believe you can.
Was that grudging respect in his voice? He shimmered and was suddenly something else. I'd seen a vision similar to the one he showed me now that morning at the church, when the three unseelie princes had circled around me, morphing from shape to shape. My brain hadn't been able to process what I'd been seeing, and I'd guessed it was a complex state of being that had more dimensions than humans could comprehend. Unlike the unseelie princes, however, Valain didn't continue moving from form to form. He adopted a static one. At least, I think it was static. It wasn't change. Stasis and change are how the Fae define everything. For example, if a human dies, or as they say, ceases to exist, they don't perceive the loss of life at all, They merely perceive change. They're cold bastards. My eyes could see Villain, but my brain couldn't define him. We've invented only words we've had need of, and we've never seen anything like this. Energy, but multidimensional? I don't understand the first thing about dimensions, just the little I learned in school about space, time, and matter. My mind strained to grasp what was before my eyes, expanded, nearly tore itself in two trying to reconcile the image with some frame of reference I understood. I couldn't find one, and the more I searched and failed, the more frantic I felt, which in turn made me keep trying to find one, which in turn made me more frantic. It was a backfeed loop, escalating quickly. Stop fighting it, I told myself. Stop trying to define and simply see. The strain eased. I stared.
You apprehend me in my true form. Mortals cannot do so and retain a unified mind. It fractures. Well done, Michaela. Was it not worth it? Would you not do it all over again?
Bile rose in my throat. At the cost of a piece of my soul? That's what he thought? That if I'd been given the choice, I would have chosen to go through what had happened on Samhain. That I would have chosen Dublin falling, the walls coming down, the Unseelie getting freed, being raped and turned into an animal that had to be rescued first by Danny, then by Barons? I would never have chosen it! It wasn't just me who had suffered. How many humans had been slaughtered that night and since? He was back in his human form.
Really? For such power? You are immune to me, a fey prince, impervious to sexual glamour. You can gaze upon my true form without your mind fracturing. You can walk through wards. I wonder what else you can do now. What a creature you are becoming.
I'm not a creature. I'm a human and proud of it.
Ah, Michaela. Only a fool would still call you human now.
He vanished, but his voice lingered.
Your spear is at the abbey, princess.
Laughter danced on the air. I'm not a princess either. I snapped, then frowned. And how do you know where my spear is?
Barons approaches.
The words were nearly indistinguishable from the chilly morning breeze, a breath of sultry, warm air in sharp contrast to the frigid, wintry day, gusted down my shirt and caressed the tops of my breasts. I yanked my coat shut and buttoned it. Stay out of my clothes, even as the hot air you are, Villain! More laughter.
Unless you wish to see the one that exploited you at your weakest, perhaps even made you so. Go southeast, Michaela, and quickly.
A snapshot from late last night flashed behind my eyes. Me, nude, straddling Baron's face. I went. Certain dates are stuck in my head, permanently scarred there. July 5th, the day Alina called my cell phone and left a frantic message that I ended up not hearing until weeks later. She was murdered mere hours after she placed that call. August 4th, the afternoon I stumbled into a dark zone for the first time and ended up on the front steps of Baron's Books and Baubles. August 22nd, the night I had my first skull-splitting encounter with the Shisadu. October 3rd, the day Barons fed me Unseelie to bring me back to life, and I experienced the intoxicating effects of dark fey power. October 31st? Yeah, well, enough said. It had been an insane few months. Today I had no idea what the date was, so I couldn't etch it into my memory just yet, but I knew I would never forget a single detail of it. The entirety of Dublin had been devoured by shades, turned into a wasteland. If there was another person alive in the city besides myself, they were in deep hiding. I walked for hours through eerily silent districts. Not one blade of grass remained, not a shrub, bush, or tree. I knew I shouldn't waste time, especially if Barron's was nearby, but I needed to see this. I collected snapshots of the city like bricks, and I stacked and mortared them into a wall of determination. I would live to see this affront to humanity undone. What few newspapers were left on the stands were dated October 31st, the last day Dublin had functioned. The city had fallen that night and never gotten back up. Storefronts were bashed in, windows broken out. There was glass everywhere, cars abandoned, some on their sides, others burned. The worst part of it was the dried husks. I quit counting after a while, blowing down the streets. Tumbleweeds of human remains, that part of us that shades find indigestible. I would have wept, but I didn't seem to have tears left in my body. I gave the bookstore wide berth. I couldn't bear to see if it had been destroyed. I preferred to keep my second-to-last image of it in mind. The way it had looked the afternoon of Halloween. Everything in its place, waiting for me to return. Push open the door, pick up the mail, straighten the magazines people were always riffling through, start a fire, curl up on the Chesterfield with a good book, and wait for that first customer of the day. Every street lamp I passed had been smashed, many ripped right out of their concrete bases, twisted and flung, as if by raging giants. Shades have no physical form, so I assumed some other cast of Unseelie must have done this to ensure that, if we somehow managed to get our grids back up and running, there'd be no lamps to route the power to. Almost as bad as the husks, I cringed every time I stepped on one, and it crunched beneath my feet, were the piles of clothing, cell phones, jewelry, dental devices, implants, and wallets. Each was a sacred burial mound in my mind. Still, it didn't keep me from picking up a few things. An open switchblade caught the cold morning light and my attention. I suspected its owner had been trying to stab the unstabbable when the shade devoured him. I'll put it to good use, I told the pile of black leather topped by a necklace of metal skulls. I promise. I retracted the blade and slid it into my boot. My next scavenged prize was a chunk of living Unseelie flesh I found flopping in the street. I had no idea where it had come from, how or why, but it sure might come in handy. Ingesting fey flesh not only made the average human able to see the fey, including the innately invisible shades, as well as any she-seer, it also bestowed super strength and heightened senses, the ability to dabble in the black arts, and miraculous healing powers. I used my new switchblade to dice it, then stopped in a ransacked drugstore where I pilfered baby food jars, washed them out, and presto, I had a new stash of Unseelie sushi if I needed it. Assuming, of course, I got into a situation dire enough that I would, A, be willing to sacrifice my she-seer talents, which seemed to be growing by leaps and bounds, B, let myself be vulnerable to my own spear again, which I fully intended to have back by the end of the day, come hell or high water, and C, ever be willing to put any part of anything Unseelie in my mouth again, I'd had more than my unwilling fill. I shuddered. Interestingly, I seemed to have been cured of my burgeoning addiction to eating Unseelie flesh. I eyed the baby food jars and their squirming contents with revulsion. Still, weapons are weapons, and all weapons are good weapons. A short time later, I was in a slightly dented Range Rover Sport. I'd swept the husks from it, trying not to look too hard at the tiniest husk as I'd unbelted and gently placed the car seat, along with a fluffy pink teddy bear and a shirt that said, "I Heart Daddy," beneath a leafless oak tree. I headed for the Abbey, mostly alongside the road because so much of it was clogged with abandoned cars. I munched a couple of protein bars as I drove and paused periodically at petrol stations and convenience stores, stocking the back of the Rover with water, food, batteries, and, at one of my stops, plastic containers of gas I'd discovered already pumped, much to my mixed emotions. I needed it, and was grateful for it. But there'd been no way to miss the pile of rugged work pants, hip implant, Irish fisherman sweater, and boots next to the three containers. Had a father come out too close to dusk for gas to keep his family's generator running? Did they still wait somewhere, cowering in the darkness? About an hour after I'd left the city, I saw the strangest thing. Initially, from a distance, I mistook it for a very large, very low-flying, bizarre plane. But as I drew closer, I could see that it was an unseelie hunter and some other kind of fey that I'd never seen before locked in battle, beating air with their massive wings, tearing at each other with teeth and talons. Were unseelie fighting themselves? Or was this a seelie fighting an unseelie? Were the hunters once again keepers of fey law as they'd been an eternity past? I didn't know. I didn't care. I just wanted to pass unnoticed beneath their radar. Hunters hunt, she sears. Was I giving off a betraying scent? It was too late to go back, and I needed to go forward, so I held my breath and muttered prayers to every deity I could think of that the fey were too engrossed in their fight to look down. One of the pagan gods must have heard me, because I passed beneath them without incident, holding my breath and watching as the battle vanished to a pinpoint in my rearview mirror. I sucked down air greedily and pretended my hands weren't shaking. "My kingdom for a spear," I muttered. About 30 minutes from the abbey, I got another surprise. Dirt gave way to wintered grass. For whatever reason, the shades had stopped here. Perhaps it was the farthest they'd gotten, and they were hunkered in a dark culvert or had slithered beneath a fallen tree for the day, where they impatiently awaited the night to resume eating their way toward the abbey. Perhaps the soil in this part of the country didn't taste good, salted with so many centuries of she-seers living on it. Perhaps Rowena and her merry band had done something to halt their progress. Who knew? I was just glad to see something besides dirt. The next surprise came so quickly, I had no chance to react. One moment I was driving parallel to a road so narrow that only a whopping good sport would call it two-lane, on a wintry Irish day, and the next I was beneath the triple canopy of a lush tropical rainforest, driving on the surface of a dark, glassy swamp, throwing up a splash of foam in my wake, and I had no idea how it had happened, or more important, why I wasn't sinking. I know cars, all kinds. They're my passion. The Range Rover Sport has a curb weight of roughly 5,700 pounds. I should have sunk like a stone. I looked out my window. Nothing but more water beneath the eerily colored surface. I blinked. What had just happened? Giant trees surrounded me, sprouting things from their trunks that looked like brilliant orchids mated to octopuses. Birds the size of my rover paddled around the trees, leathery wings folded on their backs. Periodically they stabbed the water with their beaks, tossed back their heads and swallowed. They had very large, very sharp beaks. "Verlaine?" I said incredulously. But this didn't stink of Verlaine. Verlaine did seductive when he sifted me, not disturbing and potentially lethal, although those two phrases certainly did spring to mind when he was around. Still, being sifted seemed to be the only possible explanation for how abruptly my surroundings had shifted. A hummingbird glided by. It was the size of a small elephant. Its long, pointed beak was proportionate. In my world, not that many people know it, they mistakenly ooh and ah over the sweet, delicate little sugar water drinkers. Hummingbirds are carnivores. They accept the sugar water we offer them only in order to fuel their hunt for meat. I was meat. I jammed my foot down on the gas, skidding on the water, dodging trees, birds, and vines. I didn't look behind me to see if anything was giving chase. I just drove. Abruptly, I was back in Ireland, a dozen feet from slamming into a tree. I pumped the brakes, skidded on dead grass, and stopped much too close to bark. I sat for a moment, gasping. After seeing that freaky face sky battle, I'd thought I was ready for anything. I was wrong. I got out, walked around to the back of the Range Rover, and stared at where I'd just been. It took me about 20 seconds to figure out how to see it. If I narrowed my eyes and slanted a look very casually sideways, like I was peeking, I could see the sliver of fey reality, almost as if it were trying to hide, the better to ambush me, spiking through our own. If human air was clear glass, fey air was slightly thicker, slightly wavy, and slightly off color. I remembered Samhain Night, watching from the belfry as fey and human realms had competed for space in a world with no walls. Apparently, we'd lost a few of those battles. It infuriated me. It was one more danger I had to watch out for. Dark zones were bad enough. Now I had IFPs, interdimensional fairy potholes screwing up my roads, lurking around, looking all innocuous and benign, waiting to blow out the tire or break the axle of the unwary traveler, stranding them in a no-man's land with alternate laws of physics, hostile life forms, and no discernible rules of the road. I got back into my rover and slammed the door. I resumed driving, this time watching the terrain ahead much more closely. What other surprises might this day bring? I considered the shocks I'd already faced. Barron's doing, well, that thing he'd done in order to drag me back to reality, the discovery that I was immune to wards, and the deadly sexual allure of fey princes, shades taking over half of Ireland, fey sky battles, and now IFPs. I'd never have believed the most disconcerting shock of my day was yet to come. Chapter 8. I made one last stop about 20 miles from the Abbey, where I got out and played with my new gun, taught myself to load and fire it. It took me less time to get over my initial, "Gee, what if I drop this thing and blow my own head off," than I expected. The gun felt good in my hands, solid and comforting, just like every weapon I've ever picked up. I think it's somehow coded into my She-Seer DNA. We were born to protect, to fight. The blood knows. I suspect our bloodlines have been manipulated for a long time, centuries, perhaps millennia. I resumed driving toward the Abbey, passing through dozens of wards. Rowena certainly was keeping her little flock busy, gadding about, etching protective runes and whatnot. I wondered what else she was keeping them so busy with that they didn't have time to consider mutinying, which, in my opinion, they should have done years ago. Like, say, before they lost the dark book that this whole stupid war was about, because somebody sure must have fallen asleep on her watch to let that happen. Oh, yes, I had a few bones to pick with the not-so-grand mistress. I parked my rover in front of the stone fortress of the Abbey, got out, locked it. They were my supplies and nobody was taking them, and marched to the door. I left my pack and my Michaelo in the car, but brought my gun. I was rather surprised the old woman wasn't waiting out front, arms crossed, glasses perched on her nose, magnifying the intellect and ferocity in those sharp blue eyes, with a band of she-seers gathered behind her, denying me entrance. We've never been on the best of terms, and I had no doubt that our relationship, if you could call it that, was worse now than it had been before. Frankly, I didn't give a damn. The door was locked. I fired a quick burst of bullets at the handle with my favorite new toy and kicked it open. The entry hall was empty. Could it be that no one was expecting me? I'd passed through all those wards, setting them off. I frowned. Or had I set them off? If I could pass through wards now, was it possible I did it without tripping them? That certainly could come in handy. Still, I'd just let loose a round of automatic gunfire. Surely that had alerted someone. When the attack came, it blasted me from nowhere, hit me like a brick wall, and I went sprawling on my ass for the third time that day. It was getting old. Something yanked at my gun and pummeled me like a speed boxer. Then a face blurred into view, and I gasped as she gasped. Then she stopped hitting me and grabbed me and hugged me so tight I thought my spine was going to snap. "Mac!" Danny cried. "You're back!" I laughed and relaxed. I love this kid. "Have I told you you're the shit, Danny?" She rolled off me and bounded to her feet. "Nope, never. I would have remembered it. But you can say it again if you want. And you can tell everybody else, too. I wouldn't mind a bit." Cat eyes gleamed in her gamine face. "You're the shit, Danny." I got up and slung my gun back over my shoulder. We stood and smiled for a moment, absorbed in being happy to see each other. Then we spoke at the same time. "You okay, Mac? What happened to you, Danny? You first." She looked me up and down admiringly. "Dude, you look awesome. Love the coat. What you been doing? Weight training or something?" I blushed. Then I rolled my eyes at myself, toting automatic weapons and still blushing. I needed to get over that fast. "Dude," she said reverently, "with Barons. You've been having sex this whole time. Is that how he got you back from Nympholand? I was so worried when you didn't come back. Guess I shouldn't have been. I couldn't find you anywhere. Where'd he take you? I've been hunting all over Dublin for you every chance I could duck under Rose Raider, which wasn't often," she said sourly, then immediately brightened. "You gotta tell me everything. Everything!" I wrinkled my nose. "Where did this dude thing come from?" She preened. "Don't I sound more like you? I've been watching lots of American movies. I've been practicing." "I liked you better when every other word was a cuss word, and I'm not telling you anything. Not today, not ever. All you need to know is I'm okay now. I'm back." "You had sex with Barons, and you're going to tell me one thing about it?" She looked incredulous. "Nothing. Not even one tiny little detail." Oh, God, she was so 13. What was I going to do with her? "Nothing. Ever." "You suck." I laughed. "Love you too, Danny." She grinned. "I saved you. Big time, and I owe you big time. You can pay me back by telling me about sex." "If you've been watching so many movies, honey, you know more than enough." "Not about, you know, him." I gave her a sharp look. She sounded breathless. Gone was all mischief. She looked positively doe-eyed. Danny, tough, punk Danny, looked like she'd gone soft at the knees. I was flabbergasted. "You've got a crush on Barons now? I thought it was Valaine you were so crazy about."
"Him too. But when Barons came and pulled you out of here. Dude, you should have seen the way he looked at you."
"I'm not a dude. Lose it." I was not going to ask. "So, how did he look at me?"
"Like it was his birthday and you were the cake."
At least he hadn't smashed this one into the ceiling. It seemed Barons had finally gotten his cake and eaten it, too. I winced. I refused to entertain that metaphor further. Barons' thoughts were far too complicated for me to deal with, especially any that involved eating the cake. Later I might get around to asking Danny about my earliest confused days at the Abbey. Now I had other priorities.
"My turn. What happened to you?"
Everywhere that skin was visible on the fiery-haired teen, she had bruises. Her forearms were especially bad. Two fingers were splinted. One eye was black and blue and swollen nearly closed. Her lip was busted, and both cheeks sported the yellowish-purple blossoms of healing contusions. She glanced around edgily. I tensed instantly.
"What? Is somebody coming?" "You never know around here anymore," she muttered, and looked around again. Although the hall was empty, she lowered her voice. "Been trying to get into the forbidden libraries. Hasn't been working so well."
"By doing what? Blasting into the doors at high speed?" She shrugged.
Sort of. Mostly I've been falling down. No big.
It's a big to me. It doesn't look like super healing is one of your strengths.
Try to be more careful with yourself, okay?
She gave me a quick, startled look.
Okay, Mac.
Had everyone at the Abbey left her alone for so long that a mere expression of concern for her well-being startled her?
I mean it. Quit banging yourself up unless it's absolutely necessary.
I hear and obey, Big Mac.
She flashed me an outrageous grin.
Big Mac? It was like a fist to my heart.
Alina had called me Baby Mac, sometimes Junior. I'd called her Big Mac. It was an inside joke with us.
Why'd you call me that?
Movies. American stuff. McDonald's, you know.
Don't call me Big Mac, and I won't call you Danielle.
I took a guess and knew by her instant sour look I'd guessed right.
Deal?
Deal.
Where's my spear?
She stiffened again, glanced around again, and dropped her voice even further.
Don't know, she said softly. But we picked it up that day at the church. Cat brought it back. Hasn't been seen since. I kind of thought she'd arm one of us with it.
She hasn't. My lips thinned. I knew why. Rowena was carrying it herself.
I think so, too, Danny said,
and I looked at her sharply.
Nah, I just know the way you think. We're alike that way. We see things the way they are, not the way folks want us to believe they are or how we wish they were.
Where is the old witch?
Danny gave me a glum look.
Right now?
I nodded.
Behind you, Chapter 9.
I whirled, bringing my gun up sharp and hard. And there it was, my biggest, most disconcerting shock of the day. Far more shocking than expanding dark zones, sky battles, and interdimensional fairy potholes. There stood Rowena, decked out in high grand mistress garb, the robes of the order that had been founded for the express purpose of hunting and killing Fae, arm in arm with a Fae. The Fae that had just sifted her in behind me. It was no wonder Danny had been looking around nervously, and no wonder Villain had known my spear was at the Abbey. He was at the Abbey, all cozy with Rowena, sifting her around apparently. I lowered my gun and glared at Villain.
Is this a joke? Do you think this is funny? Why didn't you just sift me here to begin with if you were coming this way?
Rowena's nose could have pointed more skyward only if she'd been lying on her back.
As the spear is no longer your possession, nor is this Fae Prince. He has seen the light you fail to see. He aids all she-seers now, not just one.
Oh, really?
We'd see about that. Both the spear and the prince.
I was talking to Villain, old woman, not you.
He doesn't answer to you.
Really?
I laughed.
You think he answers to you?
Only a fool would think a Fae Prince answered to anyone, especially when one needed one.
Are you fighting over me, Michaela? I find this attractive.
Villain tossed his golden head.
I have seen this in humans before. It is called jealousy.
If that's what you think, you have a problem interpreting subtle human emotions. It's not called jealousy, it's called, you're pissing me off.
Possessiveness.
My ass.
Is far more shapely than last I saw it.
She's been working out.
Danny snickered.
You have no business looking at it,
I said.
But Barons does.
The temperature in the room dropped sharply. My breath frosted the air.
We are not talking about Barons. We were never going to talk about Barons.
I'd like to talk about Barons, said Danny.
You chose,
Villain said coldly.
I chose nothing. I was out of my mind. Is that what this is about, Villain? Barons?
You sound jealous. Possessive.
He does,
Danny agreed.
Hold your wrist!
Rowena snapped.
The lot of you! For the love of Mary, can you not see the world is falling apart around you? Yet you stand here, bickering like children. You!
She stabbed a finger at me.
A she-seer! And you!
She actually poked Fulane in the arm, and he looked startled that she'd done it.
A fey prince!
She glowered at Danny.
And don't even get me started on you. You think I don't know what you've been doing to bruise yourself so badly? I'm grand mistress, not grand fool. Enough, all of you.
Hold your wrist yourself, old woman, I told her flatly. I'll bicker while the world falls apart if I feel like it. I've done more good and less damage than you. Who had the Shisadu to begin with and lost it?
Don't be pushing your nose into doings you can't begin to understand, girl.
Then help me understand them. I'm all ears. How were you keeping the book? That was what I wanted to know most. The secret to touching it, to containing the Shisadu, was the key to harnessing its power.
What happened?
How did you lose it?
You answer to me, Shisir!
She spat.
Not the other way around.
In whose warped fantasy?
While at my abbey. Now might be the time to take a careful look around you.
It was a threat. I didn't need to. I'd heard the other she-seers crowding close while we were arguing. The hall was large, and from the hushed murmurs, I guessed several hundred were behind me.
What have you done since the walls came down, Rowena?
I demanded.
Have you found the book yet?
Have you accomplished anything that might restore order to our world? Or are you still lording your power over a band of women who would do better with a little power of their own? You squeeze the heart out of who and what they are with your rules and regulations. You tie them down when you should be helping them learn to fly.
And getting them killed?
In any war, there are losses. It's their choice. It's their birthright. We fight, and sometimes we pay terrible prices.
Believe me, I know.
But as long as we breathe, we get back up and fight again.
You brought us the orb, spiked with shades.
You don't believe that, I scoffed. If you did, you'd have killed me when I was Priya, unable to defend myself. I'll bet the very fact that I got turned Priya is what convinced you that I wasn't allied with the Lord Master. I shrugged. Why turn a turncoat? There's no need.
There are spies within spies.
I'm not one of them, and I'm staying right here in your abbey until you see that. She blinked. I'd startled the old woman. I wasn't angling for an invitation. I was staying with or without her permission, openly or in hiding. I didn't care which. There were two things within these walls I needed, my spear and answers, and I wasn't leaving without both of them.
We don't want you here.
I didn't want my sister to be murdered. I didn't want to find out I was a she-seer. I didn't want to be raped by unseelie princes. I listed my grievances, but kept it brief. In fact, I haven't wanted a single thing that's happened to me in the past few months. Fact is, I really don't even want to be here myself, but a she-seer does what needs to be done. We stared at each other.
Would you agree to supervision?
She said, finally, very tightly. We can discuss that. Discussing is where it would end. I would take all her BS under advisement before I discarded it.
How's the book hunt going, Rowena?
I knew the answer. It wasn't. Has anyone spotted it lately?
What do you propose?
Give me the spear and I'll go out hunting it.
Never!
Bye, then. I walked past her toward the door. Behind me, she-seers exploded. I smiled. They were frustrated. They were tired of being caged and accomplishing nothing. They were primed for a little pre-mutiny meddling, and I was primed to meddle.
Silence!
Rowena said.
And you!
She snapped at my back.
Stop right there!
The hall went still. I paused at the door, but I didn't turn. I won't go out hunting it without the ability to defend myself. I paused and bit my tongue hard before adding, Grand Mistress. The silence stretched. Finally,
you can take Dani with the sword. She will defend you.
Give me the spear and she can come too, and you can send any of your other she-seers you want as well.
What's to keep you from walking away, from turning your back on us the minute I give you the spear?
I whirled, my hands fisted and my lips drew back. Later, Dani would tell me I'd looked half-animal, half-avenging angel. It impressed even her, and the kid is tough to impress.
I care, that's what, I snarled. I drove out here through a wasteland. I saw the piles and husks everywhere. I looked in the baby's car seat before I took it out of the rover. I know what they're doing to our world, and I will either stop them or die trying. So get the feck off my back, where you've been since the night you met me, and wake up! I'm not the bad guy.
I'm the good guy. I'm the one who can help. And I will, but on my terms, not yours. Otherwise, I'm out of here. Dani stepped past Rowan and joined me.
And I'm going with her.
I looked at her, my lips rounded on no, then caught myself. What rights had I just argued for? Dani was old enough to choose. In my book, old enough to kill is old enough to choose. I think hell has a special place for hypocrites. Cat stepped forward from the crowd. Of all the she-seers I'd met, the quietly persistent gray-eyed brunette who had led the small group in the attack on me at Baron's Books and Baubles, BB&B, the day I'd inadvertently killed Moira, seemed the most level-headed, open-minded, and firmly fixed on the long-term goal of ridding our world of the Fae. She and I had met several times, attempting a tentative partnership. I was still open to one if she was. In her mid-twenties, she had the unassuming, quiet confidence of someone much older. I knew she had influence over the others, and I was interested to hear what she had to say.
She's a tool, Grand Mistress. And, like it or not, she may be our most useful yet. You no longer blame her for spiking the orb.
She can stay and help us get rid of the blime effects if she's so innocent.
Language,
Rowena said sharply. I rolled my eyes. Oh, for crying out loud, Rowena, it's a war, not a congeniality contest. Somebody snickered.
Wars need rules.
Wars need to be won, I fired back, to a satisfying chorus of murmured assents.
What say you to a vote? Cat proposed.
Fine.
Rowena and I both snapped in unison and looked at each other with distaste. I could tell she didn't believe for a moment I might win, or she wouldn't have agreed to it. I wasn't sure I would either, but I figured high emotions and years of dissatisfaction with her rule gave me nearly even odds. Cat had a large following among the she-seers, and she was arguing for me. Even if I lost, at least I'd know who I could count on my side. Cat turned to face the hall, crammed to overflowing with she-seers in the doorways.
It's being left up to us, so think it through well and call it. Does she stay, or does she go? If you're after her staying, raise your right hand and hold it high while I take your tally.
It was a tight vote. I won by a narrow margin. I committed to memory the face of every woman who voted against me.
What the feck is Valaine doing here?
I demanded, the moment Dani and I were alone. It was hours before we were. Rowena had decided to push me a little in front of the other she-seers after I'd won the vote, to see if I'd bend. She instructed me to clear no less than a dozen shades from the abbey before I ate or slept, in order to earn my keep. I'd bent for her this time. Not only did I enjoy tracking the shades and driving them out into the late afternoon light, I'd been watching them long enough as my neighbors at the bookstore that I knew all the places they liked to hide. But I've learned to choose my battles. I understood the importance of throwing a few of the smaller fights to keep my competition off balance, underestimating me. Rowena would believe I was fully cooperative, right up to the moment her ranks rebelled and overthrew her. I had no intention of staying in the abbey long. I was here for my spear, answers, and to incite riot among the Grand Mistress's followers. Wake them up to their calling. Get them to ditch the old woman and become all they could be.
"He showed up the day Barons took you," Danny said. "You should have seen it. When he heard you were gone, he went ballistic."
"The Fae don't go ballistic, Danny." Impassive, they rarely showed emotion. Not even Valaine's recently acquired reactions could be construed as ballistic. Her eyes got big.
"Dude! He iced Rowena!"
"You mean turned her into a block of it?" Danny was so full of slang it was hard to know what she meant sometimes. Since Rowena was alive, I figured she had to be speaking literally. Danny nodded.
"From the neck down, left her head uniced so she could talk. Then threatened to flick her with his fingernail so she could watch herself shatter. It was wicked cool."
"Why?" She shrugged.
"He was uber pissed that Roe let you go. I told him that nothing could have stopped Barons, but that just seemed to piss him off more. Said he'd been stuck guarding the Queen and couldn't get to you. I think he planned to do what Barons did. And when he learned Barons beat him to it by a few hours, he totally melted down. I thought he'd ice us all."
"Why is he still here? And after that little trick, how did he get to be such buddies with Rowena?" I tried not to think about what might have happened if Valaine had gotten to me first. It didn't seem to me that sex with another death-by-sex fae would have done anything but kept me prior. I could hardly imagine Valaine telling me stories of my childhood, or showing me pictures of my family to help bring me back. Danny grinned.
"Easier to show you."
She moved toward me so quickly that she blurred out of sight and was gone. Then I was gone too, or rather, the hallway we'd been standing in was gone, and I couldn't make out anything but blurs of motion and noise. I could feel Danny's hands on my shoulders. She was whizzing me somewhere at an extreme rate of speed. I banged my elbow on something that grunted.
"Ow!"
I said. Danny snickered.
"It helps if you keep your elbows tucked in."
"Watch where you're going, kid!"
someone yelled.
"Oops, sorry!"
Danny muttered. Something slammed into my hip.
"Ow!"
I said again. I heard someone curse. It faded quickly.
"We're almost there, Mac."
When we stopped, I scowled at her and rubbed my elbow. It was no wonder she was bruised all the time.
"Let's just walk the next time, okay?" "Are you kidding me? It's the coolest thing in the world to move like I do. I'm not usually so clumsy, but there are more people out of their rooms 'cause you're here and they're all talking about you. I know these halls by heart. I can do 'em in my sleep, but the feckin' people get in the way."
"Maybe you could persuade them to start signaling their turns," I said dryly. "You know, like you do when you're bicycling around as couriers." Her face lit up.
"Think they would?"
I snorted.
"Doubt it. We're not exactly their favorite people."
I glanced around. We were in a huge room filled with a U-shaped conference table arrangement and dozens of chairs. "Why did you bring me here, and what..." I broke off, staring past her at the enormous maps covering the walls. After a moment, I turned slowly.
"We call it the War Room, Mac. It's where we keep track of things."
The entire room was wallpapered with maps hung from ceiling to floor. There were notations everywhere, with post-it notes stuck on some areas, and enlarged inserts taped to others. Some of the cities bore the She-Seer's ink, SSI emblem of the misshapen shamrock, our oath to see, serve, and protect. Where's the key? What did all these symbols and notes stand for? Danny saw where I was looking.
The shamrocks show the headquarters of the foreign branches of Post Haste Inc. Ain't no key. Roe won't let us write it down. Room's majorly warded.
We have that many She-Seer offices? I was incredulous. There were more of us worldwide than I'd ever have guessed. SSI had obviously been global for a long time. Our war had also gone global while I'd been out of it. The Unseelie hadn't stayed in one place once they were freed. They'd ranged out over the entire planet, and according to what I was seeing on the maps, certain castes seemed to prefer certain climes. There were drawings and notes scribbled everywhere. It would take days for me to absorb it all. I walked around the room slowly. What are these? I pointed to two areas close together, which were marked off with brown slash marks.
Wetlands. There's a caste of Unseelie that's nuts about swamps, and they take you down as fast as shades. We don't go near them.
And these? Squares, heavily outlined in bold black marker. Danny flinched.
Some of them have been rounding up kids, really young ones. They keep them for a while before they do things with them. We try to find where and break them out.
I inhaled sharply and kept walking. I stopped when I reached a column of dates with numbers written next to them that had been crossed out dozens of times. The most recent date was January 1st. The number next to it was a few billion shy of the nearly 7 billion it should have been. I pointed a finger and didn't even try to pretend it wasn't shaking. Is this date and number telling me what I think it's telling me? Is that how many of us are left on this planet?
By your estimates, Danny said, total world population has been reduced by more than a third.
It was one of the few complete, well-spoken sentences I'd ever heard pass her lips. I looked at her sharply and caught a split second of a completely different Danny. A geeky, smart, 13-year-old abandoned by everyone she'd ever trusted or loved, in a world gone mad. It was so quickly masked by an insouciant grin that I wondered if I'd really seen it at all.
Dude, pretty intense, huh?
Her green eyes sparkled. Dude me one more time and you're Danielle forever. I looked back at the maps. I was never going to be able to sleep tonight. A third of our world's population was dead.
How long was I out of it?
What's the date?
January 7th. And, sorry, it just slips.
What does this have to do with Valaine?
Keep talking, I told myself, so you don't melt down.
We'd lost a third of our planet's population. More than 2 billion people were dead. They'd been dying the whole time I'd been a mindless animal. The guilt was crushing. I followed the maps around the room, looking for Georgia, feeling sick inside. The state had two inky spots smudged on it, one over Savannah and one over Atlanta, both of which were only a few hours from Ashford, Georgia, my hometown. Most of the spots on the maps were over major cities. What are the dark smudges? I asked, tightly, afraid I knew.
Dark zones.
My face must have betrayed my thoughts, because she added hastily,
Valaine checked on your folks. He says they're okay.
Recently? She nodded.
He keeps watch. Says he does what he can.
I drew a deep breath, the first since I'd laid eyes on the maps.
How did the shades spread so quickly?
I demanded.
How did they even get overseas? Is the power out everywhere in the world? Valaine says initially other Unseelie were helping them, till they decided the shades were chewing up their new playground too fast. Now, he says, Unseelie are fighting each other for territory. Some of them are even trying to get the power back up to keep the shades out.
I remembered the sky battle I'd seen, wondered what it had been about.
One time, when I went into Dublin looking for you, I saw humans walking with rhino boys going down into a boarded-up bar. Didn't follow, because it freaked me out to bed. They were girls, Mac. Dunno if they were Praia, but they didn't look like it. Looked like they went because they wanted to.
Her lambent gaze clouded.
Mac, I think Unseelie are the new vamps to some fecked-up groupies out there.
Does Valaine know all this? Are the Seelie doing anything about it? I was horrified. I knew my generation. We had a world of opportunities for instant gratification at our fingertips, with few or no censors. And most of my friends hadn't had a daddy like mine, who said things like, "Don't confuse intensity of emotion with quality of emotion, baby," when I'd gotten tangled up with class heartbreaker Tommy Ralston. The more he'd hit on my girlfriends, the harder I'd worked to keep him. It was like I was addicted to whatever made me feel most intensely, even though it was hurting me.
Pain is not love, Mac. Love makes you feel good.
I missed my dad. I needed to see my parents, see with my own eyes that they were all right.
Valaine says they're trying to stop the worst of the Unseelie, Danny said. But they can't kill each other, because they don't die, and we got the sword and the spear. Valaine says the Seelie want them back, but so far none of them have tried to take them from us. He says it's just a matter of time, though.
Chaos. It was complete chaos. Unseelie free, fighting Seelie, fighting one another, acquiring human groupies like Malucha's band of goth worshippers. I wouldn't be at all surprised if Malucha's cult had simply converted allegiance to the latest, greatest exotic danger in town.
A third of the world population gone.
All because we'd failed to keep the walls up on Halloween. Because I'd failed. I closed my eyes and rubbed them, as if it might somehow rub the horrifying reality of a world with a third less people right out of existence, or at least out of my mind.
At first, we had no clue what was going on anywhere. No phones or text messages, no email, no internet, no TVs or radios. It's like living in the Stone Age.
Well, maybe not that bad, she allowed with a grin.
But you get the picture. Then Valaine offered to help. Said he could sift around, gather intel, find out what was going on. Carry messages, take road places. After he iced her like that, she didn't trust him one bit. Not that she ever trusted him. But it was an offer she couldn't refuse.
What about the Shi Sadu? I take it no one's gotten their hands on it yet. She shook her head. Has anyone seen it recently? She shook her head again.
I think that's the real reason Ro let you stay, and would have even if they'd voted against you. Just would have pushed you around harder. Her and Valaine been swapping information, bartering with each other. She told him what I told her I saw in the street the day I rescued you.
I wondered how Valaine knew about that. I might have found his knowledge of the Unseelie princes incriminating, except both Valaine and Barons always seemed to have the inside scoop on everything. It no longer surprised me.
In exchange for him telling her what you'd learned about how the book was moving around, that you were targeting it by tracking the worst crimes. But now there's so much violence everywhere, and no newspapers or TV, so there's no way to find the feckin' thing.
I thought about that and smiled. Except for me. I was even more important now. Danny grinned back.
Yep. I figure we're the two most kick-ass weapons she's got.
But she's still keeping the sword from you, isn't she, Danny? Doling it out when she feels like it? Danny's expression soured and she nodded. It was time for some meddling, and Danny was definitely primed. Doesn't it seem wrong to you that the two most powerful she-seers in this abbey aren't armed at all times?
Don't you think, since you're super strong and super fast, you deserve to carry the sword? I bet even your hearing is super heightened, isn't it? That's why you heard me come in today when no one else did, isn't it? She nodded. You're amazing, Danny. You're hands down the most valuable asset Rowena has. And look at me. Not only can I track the book, I can null the bastards. Freeze them. Shut them down cold while we kill them. Remember the night we fought together? It had been exhilarating. I wanted to do it again. I wanted to do it every night until the night was ours again. I wanted to be out there prowling, hunting them like they hunted us. I wasn't willing to be afraid any longer. It was time for them to be afraid of me. Her eyes narrowed. Her lips parted on a sharp breath, and she nodded again. Her sword hand was clenching and unclenching, like mine did when I didn't have my spear and I thought about Faye. I wondered if I got that almost not quite human look on my face sometimes, too. I didn't need to see a window to know that night was falling. I could feel the approach of twilight in my bones, as surely as I imagined a vampire must. No matter how heavily warded the perimeter of the abbey was, without my spear, I felt like I was missing an appendage, the most important one. I might be immune to death by sex fae glamour, though I wouldn't trust that completely until I'd tested it on some other fae besides Valaine. But they could still capture me if they came in force. And if turning me pariah wouldn't work this time, they could just torture me to make me do what they wanted. I wasn't immune to torture. Pain bothered me. A lot. I needed my spear. Now. Danny, you and I were made for those weapons. Nobody else can use them like we can. Nobody else is as strong or has as many abilities. By keeping the spear and sword, Rowena makes all of us vulnerable. How dare she sit in her study with both of the only weapons that can kill the Fae, leaving the whole abbey unprotected? She's too old to use them. If a Fae got past the wards, she'd be worthless in a fight. We'd be sitting ducks. She knows the Seelie want the Hallows back, that it's just a matter of time. Shouldn't those weapons be in the hands of the two She-Seers most capable of defending and keeping them? And isn't that us? What are you thinking? You want to go talk to her together? Gang up on her. Tell her she has to give us the weapons. Danny looked thrilled by the idea. I snorted. Talk? Hardly. Rowena needs a little wake-up call. We don't work for her. We don't answer to her. We work with her, by choice or not at all. Fear battled with savage glee in the adolescent's face. You know there's no going back if we do this, she said breathlessly. Who wants to go back? I said coolly. I want to go forward. And if you're always looking over your shoulder, worrying about the next step you're taking, you can't. Hesitation kills. Hesitation kills! Danny echoed like a battle cry and punched the air with her fist. I'm in, Mac! Chapter 10. There are moments in my life when I feel like I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be, doing exactly what I'm supposed to do. I pay attention to them. They're my cosmic landmarks, letting me know I'm on the right path. Now that I'm older and can look back and see where I missed a turn here and there and know the price I paid for those oversights, I try to look sharper at the present. Tonight was one of those perfect moments. Speeding into Dublin in a well-stocked Range Rover beneath a moon so bright and full that I could have driven without headlights if I'd wanted to, with Danny at my side, armed with the Sword of Light, and me holding the Spear of Destiny. It felt like heaven in my hand. The weight of it, the breadth of it, the way it fit my palm so perfectly. Getting the sword hadn't been difficult, but I hadn't expected it to be. Truth was, Danny could have taken it any time she'd wanted. She knew all of Rowena's hiding places, and blasting down doors is one of her specialties. Rowena had controlled her by simple fear of repercussions, and Danny, 13 and treated like an outcast so much of the time, was starved for what little approval and attention she got. Now she had my approval and attention, and it was unconditional.
or at least not predicated on her being subservient to me. I would never do that to her. The spear had been trickier. As we'd figured, Rowena was carrying it. I never expected to be able to take it stealthily. I just wanted to take it and get out fast. And for that, plus about a zillion other reasons, I'd needed Danny. I had her slam us both into Rowena at high speed, while I kept the old woman busy trying to get untangled from me on the floor. Danny stayed in high-speed mode, patted her down, snatched the spear from a pouch the old woman had sewn into her robes, grabbed me again, and whizzed us both out. Rowena's shouts had roused the entire abbey. We'd fled into the night, followed by cries of, "Traitors! Traitors!" "We can never go back to the abbey, Mac." Danny looked simultaneously exhilarated and as young and lost as I'd ever seen her. I remembered being a teenager and didn't envy her a bit. Emotions ran so high and changed so quickly, it was hard to know which end was up. I laughed. "Oh, we're going back, Danny. I need things there." Answers. Lots of them. Tomorrow I would begin working on how to get into the forbidden libraries and putting together my own troops of she-seers.
"They'll never take us back, Mac. We ganged up and defied Rowena. We're outcasts forever."
She sounded as miserable as she did proud. "Trust me, Danny, I've got a plan." I'd been fleshing it out while I was tracking shades and driving them outside. "They'll take us back, I promise. More important, I plan to take them with me. But I needed to make a big statement first. I needed to show them how it could be. I knew what the other she-seers wanted the most, and I could give it to them, and that was the key to motivating any pack to follow a leader. Standing in the hall while they voted, I'd felt it in my blood. They were sick to death of menial tasks, of being corralled and ordered about, tired of seeing the world fall apart on their watch while they did the only thing Rowena would let them do: gather what survivors they could find and teach them to do what the pathetic and defeated did, hide. What they wanted most of all was to hunt and kill Fay. And why wouldn't they? They'd been born to do it. During her time as Grand Mistress, Rowena had tried to civilize them, circumscribe them, organize them, but she'd only been polishing their surfaces, changing nothing where it counted, because deep inside, every she-seer was a hunter, bred to kill Fay, stalking, snarling, waiting with bated breath for the opportunity to do it. Beneath the skin of even the most timid she-seer was a different creature entirely. Case in point, see Pink Mac go black. I was going to invite them out to play. I was going to give them the opportunity they'd been jonesing for, show them what we could do together. Having only two weapons wasn't the most desirable situation, but there were ways to work with it. If I could motivate 500 she-seers to fight and capture as many non-sifting Fae as possible, Danny and I could focus solely on killing them, instead of having to waste time hunting them ourselves. On our own, Danny and I might be able to take out 100 a night, but if the Fae had already been captured and rounded up, we could kill 1,000 in a few hours, maybe more. And that was if every she-seer at the Abbey managed to find and capture only two apiece. There was no doubt that Danny and I would be better than the other she-seers at capturing the Fae, and that pretty much any she-seer could stab them, but I was never letting my spear go again. I would tell the other she-seers the same thing I'd told Danny. We needed to keep the weapons because we were the only two who could protect them if the Seelie came for them. I would never let any of them know what I knew, that Valaine could take both weapons away from us at any time if he felt like it. I shoved that thought away and turned to another I was still mulling over. If we began feeding Unseelie flesh to normal humans, we could turn every man, woman, and child into a fighter and arm them with the ability to defend themselves. It sickened me to think of billions out there that couldn't even see the shades. "Are the Unseelie projecting glamour?" I asked Danny. "I mean, are they making themselves invisible to the average human?" She shook her head. "Valaine says concealment is the Seelie way of things. He says Unseelie get off on human fear. They ain't hiding nothing. The shades are still invisible to normal folk, 'cause that's their natural state, but people can see all the other castes, far as we know." so other humans could see their death coming, unless it was by shade. They just couldn't do anything about it. But if they were fed on Seelie, they would gain super strength, like Malouche, Derek O'Banion, Fiona, and Jane, and be able to fight back. We could capture far greater numbers, and wouldn't it be worth it even if it changed those who ate it on some fundamental level? I wasn't sure exactly what changes it caused or how long-term they might be, but I didn't feel worse for it. Fear of my own spear had been the greatest drawback. Wasn't the survival of our race and our world the most important thing, no matter the means by which it was accomplished? In a "your pure human genes" or "your life" contest, I'd come down firmly every time on the side of life.
IFP-Mac! Danny exclaimed. Dead ahead!
I veered sharply, skidding around it. It was a small one, the circumference of a carnival calliope. We'd seen three so far. She'd laughed when I told her what I'd christened them. They were easier to see at night. When headlights hit them, they shimmered with thousands of what looked like tiny dust motes dancing on the air. The first, the swamp I'd driven through earlier today, had shimmered pale green. The last two had been silvery. I wondered if their color had anything to do with the landscape inside and what dangers they held, if perhaps similar colors came from similar parts of Fey realms. I made a mental note to begin recording as much as I could about them in my journal. I thought I might organize scouts, pick half a dozen and send them out to learn everything they could about the interdimensional fairy potholes. Were they gates to fairy? Was there some way to use them to our advantage? It was 10:45 by the time we arrived in Dublin. We worked our way past abandoned wrecked cars, parked near Temple Bar and got out, Michaelos blazing, weapons in hand. My she-seer senses were picking up a tremendous number of Fae in the city. I sensed thousands of them, spread out in all directions. Why so many? The city was eerily quiet and appeared to be devoid of human life. Wouldn't Unseelie want to be wherever the most humans were gathered? It didn't seem as if any were left here at all. "Are you sensing a ton of Fae, Danny?" I asked.
"Uh-huh. It's part of the reason I kept coming in, looking for you and trying to figure out what was going on. Was kind of freaky alone, though. I think Dublin's like their official headquarters or something."
I stared into the shadows, searching the night for shades, glancing from dark alley to darker lane. Danny didn't miss it.
"I think most of them are gone, Mac. Last time I saw one of the creepy effects in here was more than a month ago, and it was a really small one. I think they ate their way out and just kept going. Only ones I see anymore are in the Abbey with us."
I was still keeping my Michaelo on. She made no move to take hers off, either. "Where's the boarded-up bar you said you saw?" We'd start there, kill everything that was Fae, try knocking sense into any human stupid enough to be found there. "You know what to do if we get surrounded," I reminded her.
"Grab ya and get out fast," she said with a grin. "Don't worry, Mac. I've got your back."
Like I said, it was one of those perfect moments. We fought for hours, racking up the kills. With each Unseelie we exterminated, I felt stronger, more charged, more determined to track and destroy the last one, even if it took until my dying breath. Danny and I punched and stabbed and sliced our way down the dark Dublin streets. Drunk on our own sheer kick-ass glory, we made up a song that would one day become the anthem of she-seers around the world. But we didn't know that. We only knew that shouting it kept us pumped up, feeling invincible.
"We're taking back the night! Let there be light! We're not afraid anymore! You took what was mine, and now it's time for you and me to settle the score! We're taking back the night!"
"Shh!"
Danny suddenly hissed. I froze, mid-lyric and mid-stab, dying rhino boy stuck on my spear, tusked mouth working soundlessly. I couldn't hear a thing, but I don't have heightened senses unless I've eaten Unseelie, and thanks but no. I'll survive with what gifts I have.
"Pull your spear out," she whispered.
I did, and the next thing I knew, I was being whizzed down alleys so fast and jerkily that I wanted to puke. I will never understand how Danny can stand moving like she does. Then we were still, and she was pointing.
Look up, Mac.
I looked, and shivered. With all the fae in the city, I'd not been able to distinguish castes. I harbored a special hatred for this one. Unseelie hunters. Since time immemorial, they have hunted and killed she-seers. Enforcers of fae law and punishment, mercenary to the core, they work for whoever pays them with whatever it is they want most at the moment. They flip sides constantly. They have telepathic abilities and can get inside your skull and twist you up on yourself. To make matters worse, they chill you to the bone and look like the devil himself come for your soul. Two enormous hunters were circling in the sky, a few blocks from the River Liffey. Twice the size of any I'd seen in the past, they were blacker than night, with great leathery wings, forked tails, talons as long as my spear, and eyes that blazed like furnaces from hell. They were clawing air, talons forward, screaming at something in the streets the way I imagined dragons must scream, churning black ice crystals into the air with every flap of those deadly black sails.
Do you feckin' believe it?
Danny breathed.
Are they nuts?
She didn't mean the hunters. She meant whoever was down in the streets shooting at them. I could see holes being punched in their great wings and healing almost instantly, bullets dropping to the street below. I could hear the rat-a-tat-tat of automatic gunfire. It was doing nothing much but pissing them off. A lot. Whoever was doing it was going to get themselves killed. I looked at Danny and she nodded.
Better go save their ass,
she agreed, and reached for me. I stepped back. Thanks, but it's only a few blocks. I'll walk. I turned. She grabbed my shoulder and we were there in a heartbeat. I was really going to have to loot a drugstore for Dramamine because when she let me go again, I could only stand bent over, battling the overwhelming urge to puke on a pair of shiny black shoes. Momentarily incapacitated was no way to arrive at the scene of potential danger. Super speed was worse than being sifted. Sifting was smooth. Super speed was a horse and carriage on a rutted road at jet speeds with no shocks. I looked up from the shoes and blinked. For a moment, words eluded me.
Miss Lane, good to know you're alive. I'd begun to wonder.
Turning to the uniformed troops behind him, Inspector Jane snarled,
Fire!
Chapter 11. It seemed a lifetime ago that the tough-talking, burly inspector standing before me had picked me up, dragged me off to the Garda station, and interrogated me for the murder of his co-worker and brother-in-law, Inspector Patrick O'Duffy. At least half a lifetime must have passed since I'd opened his eyes to the Unseelie that had invaded Dublin by sneaking bits of their immortal flesh into his dainty sandwiches the afternoon I'd invited him to the bookstore for tea. Then I'd taken him on a sightseeing tour and forced him to confront what was happening to his city, for the dual purposes of enlisting his aid in tracking the book and getting him off my ass. After that, we'd spoken only whenever he had a tip about the book's location, and very curtly at that, until the day he picked me up off the street again and shocked me by asking me to make him my special tea one more time. I hadn't seen that coming. I'd expected him to close his eyes and mind to the impossible to explain, like most people do. He had surprised me. I eyed him speculatively. When his men paused between rounds, I said, Are you still eating on Seely? Or was he just going after the ones he could see? Danny made a choking sound.
Eating on Seely? Eating it? Are you fucking kidding me? It's goopy, and some of them ooze green stuff, and they have, like, puss-filled things in them. Ugh! Just feckin' ugh!
She stuck her tongue out and shook her head violently.
Ugh!
She exploded again. I shrugged. Long story. Tell you later.
Need to know basis. Don't!
She made a retching sound.
You get used to it,
Jane told her. To me, he said,
I've been eating it since the day I asked you to feed it to me.
You never came back for more.
And be dependent on you? What if you weren't around when I needed it?
He snorted.
I never let it wear off, because if I did, I wouldn't have been able to see them, to kill them, to get more. Vicious cycle. Had the wife prepare it for breakfast every day. Now, with a lot of them showing themselves, it's not the problem it once was. Mummy needs it. Wife feeds it to our kids in sandwiches. Fire!
The men resumed shooting. Screams of fury filled the night sky. The noise was deafening. When it finally stopped, I snapped.
What are you doing? You can't kill them. You're just pissing them off.
I could feel their anger. Dark, deep, ancient. I could feel more than that, too. A cunning patience born of eternity. The unflappable certainty that they would outlive this nuisance in the streets below that dared offend. We were nothing. We were dust already, death waiting to happen. They were outraged that we had the audacity to even gaze upon them without being on our knees, worshipping, praying to them, begging for their permission to breathe. I learned a few months ago that telepathy with hunters goes both ways, at least for me. They can get in my head, but I can get in theirs, too, and they don't like that one bit. Even now I could feel them both pressing at me, trying to decide what I was that made me different. I guess I wasn't as notoriously well-known among Unseelie as I'd expected after my abduction by the L.M. and his Unseelie princes.
Good,
Jane said.
Because they're pissing me off. They're in my city, and I'll not be tolerating it. They think I'll be making it easy for them to hover over my streets, spy on us, track down our survivors. We're showing them otherwise, aren't we now? They're not taking one feckin' more of mine.
He turned back to his group of 50 or so crisply uniformed and helmeted men and issued a quiet command. 4 of them broke off, moved down the street, and began setting a massive gun on a tripod. Most of his men were armed with dated-looking semi-automatics, a few with Tommy guns, the only ones that seemed to be having any impact on the hunters. When Jane shouted, "Fire!" again, they raised their guns in tight unison and sprayed bullets at 2 of the Unseelie's most fearsome. A smile tugged at my lips. Jane was deliberately provoking the hunters, pissing them off because they'd pissed him off. My smile grew. When I'd reluctantly fed this man Unseelie, I'd never have foreseen this moment. How perfect! How right! We needed him here in the streets, seeing that those who survived continued to do so. This man would never stop serving his city and his people, even though his pay had been terminated months ago. He was police protector to the core. Delighted by the serendipity of it all, I laughed. Jane glanced at me sharply, and for a moment his grim expression was tinged by a smile. The admiration must have shone in my eyes because he said,
"It's what we do, Miss Lane. We're the Garda." "Fuck the Garda!"
one of his men shouted.
"We're the Guardians! A new force for a new world!" "Hear, hear!"
the men cried. I nodded appreciatively. The Guardians. I liked that. "It's good to see you too, Jane," I murmured. "Especially like this." What an unexpected boon! The hunters were pushing at me more insistently now. I sent the only message necessary upward and didn't need to use 1 ounce of telepathy to do it. I raised my spear, shook it threateningly. It shimmered alabaster in the light from my mech halo. Following suit, Danny thrust her sword into the air. The hunters hissed and reared back with such sudden violence that the vortex caused by the flapping of their great dark wings sucked the litter on the streets into the air and lifted the lids off trash cans. Bits of debris stung my face and hands. Lids clanged into the brick buildings, bouncing from wall to wall.
"We will hunt you until the end of time, She-Seer. We will eradicate your line."
I was pretty sure it already had been, except for me. But couldn't have replied if I'd wanted to. I was on my knees, clutching my head. It was an awkward feat, wearing a mech halo and holding a spear.
They'd surprised me. These hunters weren't just bigger. They were something else, too. Weren't all of them the same? When the Unseelie King had done his experiments and created his dark race, had he made variations on his themes? Were some of the same castes more deadly and powerful than others? The bastards had nearly split my skull with their threat. I hadn't been prepared for it. I was going to have to regard every Fae I encountered, from this moment on, as a wide-open possibility, unpredictable in any but the most basic ways. It pissed me off. A knife should be a knife. How was I supposed to live in a world where a knife could be a grenade? I was going to have to make no assumptions. Ever. Expect the unexpected. I might be on my knees outside, but I wasn't inside. I sought that dark cave where I'd so recently been an animal.
Try, you fuckers!
I blasted them. They screamed again. I heard the pain in it and smiled. Trash can lids clattered to the pavement. Debris battered my head and shoulders. The night stilled. The hunters were gone. I lifted my head and watched two winged silhouettes fly past the moon. It was an eerie sight. Even more eerie, the moon had a crimson tint around the edges, like a halo of blood. Was the juxtaposition of Fae and human realms changing them? Were the dimensions bleeding together, altering each other? What would our world be like in a few more months? A few more years? I pushed up from my knees to find Jane staring at my spear.
Those are the weapons you spoke of at our tea?
He said.
The ones that can kill the Fae.
I inclined my head. I didn't like the way he was staring.
We've never tried to bring down one of those devil dragons.
Hunters, I told him. Ironic and fitting that he'd singled out his Fae equivalent to harass. They're enforcers of Fae law. Although they're Unseelie, they work for both courts, depending on who pays best. I saw a flash of amusement in his dark eyes. Then it was gone, and he was staring fixedly at my spear. My fingers tightened around it.
We know we can't cage them like the others we capture. They're too big. But with that spear, we could kill them where they fell.
Cage them? You're caging Unseelie? How?
Took us some time to sort it out. When you opened my eyes to what was happening, I opened my mind to the old legends. We Irish are steeped in them. I kept stumbling across lore that said the old ones couldn't abide iron. I decided that if werewolves hated silver, and vampires hated holy water and garlic, and those things could harm them, perhaps iron could harm a fae.
Does it? I asked.
To some degree. It seems to interfere with their power. Enough of it can trap and hold some of them where they are. The more pure the iron, the better. Steel doesn't work so well.
He slipped his close-fitting helmet from his head and showed me the inside.
We coat them with iron. We lost a few good men before we learned what your so-called hunters could do.
Iron keeps the hunters from being able to project into your head? I'd be altering my Mikhalo the moment I could get my hands on some.
Not entirely. It dampens it, makes it survivable. We all heard what you heard, just not as painful. But we've gotten pretty used to them trying to feck with us. We're wearing iron everywhere, around our necks, in our pockets. It's what we make our bullets from.
Fucking brilliant! Danny exclaimed. Mac, we need iron!
Jane glanced at my spear, then at Danny's sword.
Do you know how much good we could do with one of your weapons?
He searched my face.
It's not like we're looking to leave you unarmed. The two of you could share the sword.
No!
Danny and I snapped at exactly the same moment. I tensed. I didn't need to look at Danny to know she hovered on the verge of super speed, a heartbeat from whizzing us out of there.
Miss Lane, we're all in this together.
Not that together.
Look at us! We're capturing hundreds of Fae a week, locking up the ones that can't pull that vanishing into thin air trick. Now there's a lethal move for you.
He said bitterly.
They call it sifting, Danny told him.
He cursed.
Well, those sifters come back and kill my men. They either sneak in behind us or track us like they're playing with us. They'd think twice if they knew we had a way to kill them.
You have two weapons that can. You can't tell me that's fair.
What the feck is fair, Jane? Is it fair that I got dragged into this to begin with?
We all got dragged into this.
He growled. Touché, I thought. We can work something out, I offered. We'll kill them for you. The more Faye dead, the happier I'd be.
Some of them will still get away. Unless you're saying you'll hunt beside us. Be there to bag the buggers the moment we take them down.
I can't. I'm hunting something else, and without it, none of this will ever end. His eyes narrowed.
Would that be the book I was helping you track?
If I don't find it, Jane, we'll never be able to drive them from our world. And I'm afraid the longer the walls are down, the more screwed up things are going to get. Maybe irrevocably. He measured me coldly. Finally, he said,
I should barter with you. Demand favor for favor. But it's not my way. I care more that people survive than I care for vengeance. You might take a lesson from that. Your book is still in Dublin.
It's not my book, I hissed. When he'd called it that, my spine had iced with violent chills, as if somehow it was, or wanted to be. Or I was having some hint of a premonition of things to come. I shook it off. So, the Shisadu was still being spotted in Dublin. That explained why so many Fae were here. We were all hunting it. I wouldn't have thought it would be so difficult to find. It had been months since the walls had come down. Didn't it want to be found by Unseelie? Weren't they kin? What did it want in this city? It was a huge world out there, with countless countries and opportunities for chaos and destruction. Yet it remained in Dublin. Why?
It took one of my men a few weeks ago on his way home to his family. Would you like to know what it did then, Miss Lane? After it hitched a ride home to his wife, kids, and his mother.
I kept my head perfectly still and said nothing. I wasn't about to ask. I knew what happened when the book took over a human. I'd seen so much carnage in the last few months that I was running out of room in my head for more gory images. I'm sorry, I said, knowing it wasn't enough. I understood him wanting one of the Hallows. I could even have made a really good case for it myself in his shoes. A kinder, gentler Mac would care. A nicer me would share. I wasn't, and I wouldn't. It's unfortunate there aren't more weapons to go around, I told him with complete sincerity, but it didn't change a thing. I had enough to worry about, and I had plans in the works that were every bit as good or better than Jane's. I'd meant it when I said we could work something out. We could stop by once a week, wherever he and his men were keeping the Fae caged, and kill them all for him.
I'd prefer it not end this way,
he said softly, and sliced air with a hand gesture. His men closed in around us. Danny moved to stand next to me, shoulder to shoulder. I imagined that to them we looked like two young girls, huddling close, daunted by such a show of armed manpower. So would I said just as softly. Never try to take from me, Jane. Never make that mistake. What's mine is mine. You really don't know what you're messing with.
I don't want to mess with you at all, Miss Lane. I'm merely looking for a little teamwork.
I've already got my team, Jane. I looked at Danny and nodded. Her face lit up and she grinned.
Took in your elbows, Mac.
I poked them out. The better to bruise a few ribs along the way. I got a gratifying chorus of grunts, heard guns clatter to the pavement. They didn't even see us go.
We need iron, Mac,
Danny said as we moved down the street, back at normal speed again. We'd put a huge chunk of the city behind us in a matter of seconds. Her mode of transportation, nauseous as it made me, was worth its weight in gold. I nodded absently, still mulling over the Jane encounter. I regretted that it had ended on a note of animosity. I wanted every front in the battle for our planet united, with no cracks any Fae could slip through.
We need more than iron.
I was busy making a mental list to scribble in my journal later. Between high school and college, my dad had made me take a Franklin Planner course. He said it would help me get control of my life.
I told him I had control of my life. Son, friends, fashion, marriage one day. That's not enough for you, baby, he said. I argued. He bribed. I took the course. Let Daddy spend a fortune on pink flower-covered calendar pages. Doodled on them until I got bored and shelved it. What a brat I'd been. One of the primary tenets of the course was that highly successful leaders kept journals, morning and night, in order to stay tightly focused on their goals. I was going to be a highly successful leader.
I don't have a gun, Mac. I need a gun.
Danny had turned to face me and was walking backward, bounding from foot to foot. 1,000 watts of hyper-energy, gobbling a candy bar. I was surprised her auburn hair wasn't crackling with static electricity from frantic friction with the pavement. I laughed.
All weapons are good weapons, is that it?
Aren't they?
Watching her was like watching a ping-pong ball bounce back and forth. Zing, 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 zing. I liked the way she thought. I've got a plan.
You said you'd make them take us back at the Abbey. Is this part of it?
You bet.
I eyed her speculatively. Just how super is your super hearing? If there was somebody really stealthy nearby, could you hear him before we stumbled on him? Her eyes narrowed.
How stealthy?
Very.
She gave me a suspicious look.
We talking Jericho Baron stealthy?
I frowned. How do you know how stealthy he is?
I saw him the day he busted you out. The 9 of them were all the same, oozing whatever it is he oozes.
I opened my mouth, closed it, tried to wrap my brain around what she'd just said. Then,
9? I said.
8 other men like Barons? As in, exactly like him?
Well, they weren't 9 tuplets or nothing, but yeah, he had 8 other, whatever they are with him, big men, badasses. Major show of force breaking you out. Roe never would have let you go.
She was bouncing from foot to foot so rapidly she was becoming difficult to focus on.
I don't remember that. How come I didn't see them? I mean, I know I was out of it, but...
He didn't let any of them near you. It was like he didn't even want them to see you. None of them was human, that's a fact.
I sucked in a sharp breath. You know that how... Her face was too blurred to see, but I heard the scowl in her voice.
He grabbed me out of super speed, like it was no effort at all. Nothing human could do that.
Barons was able to stop you? I said incredulously.
Snatched me right out of the air.
How could he even move fast enough to get to you in the first place? I exclaimed. Was there anything the man couldn't do? Most of my plans relied heavily on Danny's super speed.
Exactly what I thought.
I tried to focus on her, but couldn't. It was giving me a headache.
Would you slow down? I said, exasperated. You're impossible to see. Sorry,
said the smudge of long black leather coat, McHalo lights and luminous sword.
Happens when I get excited or upset. Pissed me off that he could do it. Hang on.
She was visible again, tearing open another candy bar. So there are 8 others like Barons. I tried to wrap my mind around the fact. Where had they been all this time? What were they? What was he? Another cast of Unseelie no one knew about?
You're absolutely certain it's not possible they were normal men? No way. They moved weird, way weirder even than Barons. Like he's the civilized one of the lot. It was creepy. I didn't pick up Faye, but I sure didn't get no human read off him either. And some of their eyes were way fecked up. Nobody wanted to get near him. She sears plastered against the walls, trying to stay as far out of their way as possible. One of them had a blade to Rose neck, all toting Uzis, storming in there, not taking shit from nobody. You could tell they were death-walking if anybody even blinked wrong. The girls couldn't stop talking about it. They were pissed, but, well, they were kind of fascinated, too. Should have seen the way those dudes looked. The way Barons looked.
Dude,
she said reverently, then glanced at me, alarmed.
I mean, man, you should have seen it. Don't call me Danielle, I hate that name. There were 8 other beings like barons out there. I could barely deal with one. Who and what were they? Of all the things I'd learned today, this one rattled me the most. I'd considered him an anomaly. One of a kind. He wasn't. I should have expected the unexpected. 8 others like him. At least 8 others, I amended. Who knew? Maybe he'd only brought a limited number with him. Maybe there were dozens more, and he'd never told me about them. Not one word. Any reservations I might have entertained about the plan I'd been working on since encountering Jane vanished. You're right, Danny, I said. You need a gun. In fact, we need a lot of guns, and I know just where to find them.